The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parsha is Parsha's Kishiso. In the Parsha we have, this is in Perek Lamed Beis, we have the story of the Egel Azov, the golden calf. Immediately before then it states, Vayitein al Meisha kechaleis el daber itei bahar Sinai shnei luchais ha'edus, that Hashem gave to Meisha as he was finishing speaking to him on Har Sinai, the two tablets of the testimony. Luchais Evan Ksubi Be'etzba Elokim. These were stone tablets written with the finger of Hashem. Then it states, by Yara Om Kiveshis Meisha Laredis Minahor. The nation saw that Meisha was delayed in coming down the mountain. By Yikla Om Al Arin, and they gathered up against Arin. And they said, Kum Aselom Elohim, let us go make a god, Asher Yilchel Afoneinu, that will walk before us. Kizeh Meisha Yisha Asher Ha'alonu Mi'eres Mitzrayim Le'adana Me'ho Yaleh. Because this Meisha, this person Meisha, who took us out of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. And Aaron told them, Por Kudniz Mi'azov Asher Bosn Ne'sheichem B'neichem V'ne'sheichem V'avi Yaleh. Remove all of the golden jewelry which are on the ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me. And the nation went and they took the golden jewelry which was on themselves, and they brought it to Aaron, and he took them and he melted it down, and he made a calf out of the gold, out of molten gold. And they said, this is your God Israel, which has taken you up out of Egypt. And Aaron saw what happened. He built a mizbeach, an altar. And he said, he called out, Chag Lashem Ahor. Tomorrow will be a yantif for Hashem. And the next morning, they got up early and they made sacrifices, and the nation sat down to celebrate, to eat, to drink, and they got a tzachek and they went to sport. Now we know the rest of the story. Up on the mountain where Moshe still was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him what's happening down there, you better go back right away. And Moshe went down, and when he saw what took place, he was carrying the luchais, he broke the tablets. And then he went, and the next day he judged the people, and the Vayamed Moshe Bishara Machne Vayemer Mil Hashem Eloi. He stood up against all of the people and he said, all of those who are true to Hashem, loyal to Hashem, let them come to me. And the whole Shevet of Levi came to him. Rashi brings, Mikan Shekola Shevet Kosher. The whole Shevet, the whole tribe of Levi was kosher. They did not worship this idolatry. This, incidentally, is why the Levim was Zeicha. They had the merit to become the tribe which would be separated from the rest of Klal Yisrael to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Kahanim would come from them. Ayim Elehem, and Meisha said, this is what Hashem has said, Simu Ish Charbe Ayerechai, every man take his sword and go Mishar Loshar, from gate to gate in the camp, v'hirgu ishes ochi, v'ishes re'eu, v'ishes krevei. And everyone should go and kill those that committed idolatry. That was those that they were that they could testify against, and even though they might be relatives. And the story continues. This Kate is the greatest sin that Klal Yisrael did against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There can be no greater betrayal than idolatry. And this was an idolatry of the whole nation, or at least not of the whole nation, but of a great amount of the nation. And it required Moshe to break the tablets and not give the Torah to Israel. He said, how can I give Torah to Israel? It states called Benecha Leyechal Bay. Rashi brings that by the Korban Pesach, it states that if there's amongst Israel an idolater, he must not be counted in the Korban Pesach, the sacrifice of the Pesach. This is just one mitzvah. So how much more so the whole Torah? How can I give to a nation that's idolatrous? And had it not been for Moshe's appeal and supplication on Har Sinai, which took place afterwards, he went up back up to the mountain for 80 days, 40 days, and again 40 days, we would never have received the Torah from Hashem. Now, exactly when did this take place? Rashi brings in Posuk Yud Ches. Just trying to find it here. Yeah. Rashi says, Ein Mugdam Mamocha Beteira. The Torah many times writes without a chronological order. Maisa Egel Kedem Letzivoy Melechas HaMishkol. Yomim Rabim Hoyo. Even though in Parshas Yisro is where we learned about the giving of the Torah. And since then, we learned Mishpatim, many of the laws of the Torah, and we learned about Truma and Tetzaveh, the building of the Mishkan and the making of the Bigdei Kohuna, the garments of the Kohen. Rashi says, still, that is not the correct order. The Torah many times chooses to write not in chronological order. But this came first, many days. Shehari b'yudzayin b'tamas nishtrabalu aluchais. Because this took place on the 17th of Tammuz. That's when Moshe came down from the mountain. He went up on he initially went up on the 6th of Sivan, and that's with Shavuos. And we all heard the Torah in the Ten Commandments. He came down and he went up again the next day on the 7th of Sivan, and he stayed up 40 days. And when he came down on the 17th of Tammuz, which was now, that's when he saw the Egel Azov, the golden calf, and he broke the tablets. And he stayed down another day to judge the people. And on Yutes, the 19th of Tammuz, he went back up to the mountain. And he went to be Mispalo. He asked, appealed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for slicha, for forgiveness. He stayed there till the end of that 40 days, which came out to be the 29th of Av. Then Hashem told him, go back down, psol lecha, make new tablets, and come back up tomorrow, which would be Reish Chedesh Elul. And he stayed now a third 40 days, which terminated on Yom Kippur, the 10th of Tishrei, and that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the new tablets, the second tablets, and he came down. And that was a great simcha by Israel, and a great slicha, the forgiveness. And that's why we have Yom Kippur on the 10th of Tishrei. So, this was 80 days later, after Moshe had come down to find the golden calf, and it was only on the day after Yom Kippur that he started to instruct the nation in the laws, Parshas Mishpatim, and in the building of the Mishkan. So Rashi explained, even though we already learned about the building of the Mishkan and the Big Dekuda, that was 80 days later after this took place. And we already learned also about the Miluim, when they started to put up the Mishkan, and the Kohanim, that was already later, that was in Nisan, 6 months later. At any rate, so when did this take place? This took place while Moshe was still on the mountain from the original 40 days that he went up after Shavuos. Now the shailos, the questions are well known. Firstly, how is it possible that Klal Yisrael should do such a sin? Well, you have it encompassed a great amount of the people. It was mass action. They went and they totally betrayed HaKadosh Baruch Hu by serving idolatry and saying, this is the God which has taken us out of Egypt. That's the first question. The second question is, even if we could entertain such a thought that they could do this, how could they do it at this time? Here they had just come to Har Sinai. They had just gone out of Egypt. 49 days later they came to Har Sinai. Actually, they came a little less than 49 days. They came Reish Chodesh Sivan. And then 49 days later they were by the mountain and Moshe was getting ready to go up to receive the Torah. The next day was Shavuos, and they heard the Ten Commandments, they heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they saw all of the miracles of that took place on Mount Sinai. And now Moshe went back up to learn the entire Torah, and at this time they go and they commit such a sin. The Chazal refer to this type of sin as a kala shezinse b'seichu posei, as a kala that was disloyal to her choson on the day of the wedding. How is this possible? Third question. We see Aaron was involved in this. They came to Aaron and Aaron said, all right, bring me your gold and he'll make something from it. And then he said, Chag Lashem Mochor, tomorrow will be a Yamtiv. How is it possible that Aaron could be involved in all of this? Firstly, to explain this a little better, al pi hapshat, in accordance to the simple sense. Well, not the simple sense, but if we read better into the psukim and the droshes of the Chazal, the sages tell us a great many things, and actually there's a great many things that we can learn from this whole episode. Firstly, is that there was an error that took place. When it states in Pasuk Aleph, Vayara Omki Veshish Meisha Lereres Minahor, the word Boshesh is a strange word. It's not grammatically spelled properly. Well, the simple sense, and that's what the Targum says, Ichar, they saw that Moshe had delayed in coming down from the mountain. But in such a case, it shouldn't have said Boshesh, it should have said Bosh. There's an extra sheen there. This is pointed out by the Baal Torah Tamima. And the Gemara makes a drosha on this. The Gemara says, in Masechta Shabbos, on Daf, Peites, Al tikre beishesh el bo shesh. This word is actually a conjunction of bo shesh. The sixth hour has come. Mishasha lemeisha lemorab. When Meisha went up. Now we said he received the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan. And that's when he spoke to the nation and we heard the Ten Commandments. And then the next morning Meisha went up, back up to the mountain. So when he went up, Omel Henli Israel, he told Israel, the Seif Arboim Yaim, at the end of 40 days, Bitchila Sheish, and at the beginning of the sixth hour from sunrise, which means noon, Anibo, I will come back. The Seif Mem Yaim, 40 days passed, the sixth hour came, and Meisha had not returned. Bar Sotan. So the Sotan came. V'irve v'sa'olam. He came and he created a great confusion. Rashi explains the Sotan. The Gemara says, who's the Sotan? The Sotan and the Malach HaMoves and the Yetzer Hara is all one force in the world. Amalehem Meisha Rabchem Heichen Hu. He said to the people, your leader Meisha, where is he? So they said, Ola Lamorim, he's gone up to the heavens. So he said, Bo Shesh, the sixth hour has come, and Meisha's not back. And through this, he instigated a great fear and panic and confusion in the people. Because the people started to say, he's right. Moshe said that he'll be back on the 40th day, after 40 days. Sheishos, the sixth hour. It's the sixth hour, it's noontime, and he's not back. So that's what is meant when it states, Mayara omki voshesh Moshe l'eres minahor. Not only that he was delayed in coming down from the mountain, but kibah sheish, the sixth hour has come, and Meisha has not returned yet. And the Shotan jumped in. Now, why wasn't Meisha back? Meisha was a man of his word, especially on something as important as this. So Rashi explains in Chumash, and he explains in Masechet Shabbos. Meisha said that I'm going up and I'll be there for 40 days and then I'll return. When he said 40 days, he meant 40 days shlemus, total days. In other words, with the preceding evening. He went up on the 7th of Sivan, but he went up in the morning. It states, Kol Hashkomas Hoya Babeker. He went up in the morning, so that day Moshe had not taken into consideration, because that was not a full day. So the 40 days only started to be counted from the evening later. And that's what he said, that I'll be there 40 days. He meant day and night. And he did come down. See, he came down the next day. As it states that in the parsha, the next day, when they were celebrating, he came down. So he came down exactly when he said, but there was this misunderstanding. Actually, on what day did he come down? On the 17th of Tammuz. The 17th of Tammuz, by us, is a great day of tragedies, because that was the day on which he broke the tablets. And from there, the 17th of Tammuz always became a day of tragedy. The Gemara brings, the Mishnah Masechet Tainis brings, Hei Dvorim Rabbi Yudzayin B'Tammuz. Five tragedies took place on the 17th of Tammuz. The first was the breaking of the tablets, and then it goes on to tell us that that's when the Babylonians broke through the city, and that's when the Romans sieged Yerushalayim, and so forth. We have 2 days of tragedy, the 17th of Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. It's interesting to note that the source of the ninth of Av is the Meragli, second great sin that Klal Yisrael committed. And they didn't want to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they spoke Lashon Hara against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was on the ninth of Av. And the Mishnah tells us five great tragedies happened on the ninth of Av. And the first one was that of the Meraglim, of the scouts. But what's interesting to note is the 17th of Tammuz might be a day of tragedy, but it was really set aside for a day of Simcha, because that was the day that Moshe had told them that he would come down with the Torah, with the complete Torah. See, and Shavuos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said over the Ten Commandments, and they heard the Torah concisely. But Moshe stayed another 40 days in order to learn the entire Torah and then come down and be able to give it all over to Klal Yisrael. And he said, I'll come down at noon on the 40th day, and that was the 17th of Tammuz. So actually the 17th of Tammuz was set aside to be a great Yom Tov. But unfortunately this took place and was turned into a tragedy. On all of our Tanesim, on our days of tragedy, we always say, Yahapech Hashem L'Sosen L'Simcha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should one day turn them into great days of Simcha. So here, in regards to the 17th of Tammuz, he just has to return it to what it was originally meant to be. But it started with this error. Now, secondly, the people had what to panic over, because they had come out of Egypt through supernatural miracles. No one could conquer Egypt. It was the most powerful empire in the world. Fact is, it states that a single slave never escaped from Egypt. And here they were, millions of people that had walked out of Egypt, and not only walked out, but they totally annihilated and destroyed the land, that nation. That was something they couldn't do. That was done through the Yod Chazoka and the Zreya Netuya, the great arm of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But who was the one that was guiding all of this? This was Moshe. Nobody else would dare speak to Paray. So this was Moshe. And now they were in the middle of a barren desert with no food, no water. It was a place of Nechoshim v'Akrabim, deadly scorpions and deadly snakes. No man could survive. And Moshe has disappeared. Moshe has disappeared. Now, where did Moshe disappear? He went up to the mountain and nobody saw him. So it was sufficient. It was a sufficient test of their trust that he should disappear for 40 days and still come back. But now the 40 days in their mind had gone by and he hadn't come back. So this was the situation that they found themselves in. So this was the fertile soil of which other elements could start working in. Then we have the Keach HaSotam. Chazal tell us that we must always be very, very careful. It states, La'ilam al tamei ra'od b'bokum sakona. Person should never look for dangerous situations. If he's in a dangerous situation, all right. But he shouldn't look for dangerous situations. These people that take these jumps off the bridges are looking for trouble. The fact is, it states that a person should always be mispalel, that he shouldn't get sick. Because when he does get sick, heaven forbid, he's seriously sick, then the Beis Din Shomala, the Beis Din says, Yoveshchus v'hipoter. Now you have to bring reason why you should become cured from your illness.
Whenever a person is in a dangerous situation, he has to come on to extra merits to get out of it. And the Yetzer Hara, the Shotan, the Malach HaMavis, which is constantly here, they are hardly fools. They look for such situations. So, when Klal Yisrael was in a situation like this, the Shotan couldn't be more happy. And he jumped in. And Rashi tells us, this again is from the Gemara in Shabbos. See, at first when he said, Meisha, where's your leader Meisha? 6 hours is here, it's noon and he's not here. He didn't move the people that much. They said, he'll come. We believe in him. So then he said, he has died. So they still didn't bother. Then he created great winds. He brought great storms and clouds. And this started to shake them up. Then the moose mitosai. Then he even showed them a cloud that looked like Moshe was being carried through the heavens. In other words, the Shotan was jumping in. Rashi brings Gvov that Vayashkimu, they got up the next morning to make a yantif with this god of theirs. The Shotan helped to wake them up. He gave them an extra zizus. Further, Rashi brings that the Shotan that had a hand when they started to take this gold and melt it down, and then a golden calf came from there. The Shotan had a hand. He had a hand in creating this golden calf. The fact is that one of the things that egged on the people so much was the hatzlocha, the success they were having in making this golden calf. And when it states Vayar Aaron, when Aaron saw what was going on, he said, Ro shehitzliach maise sotan, velo hoyela pedli tkaisen legamri. He said, the sotan has come in and he's causing them success. And he's going to have a very difficult time to stop them. So we see, we had the Keach HaSotan. Incidentally, from here we can learn something very important. Many times, we do something. We're wondering if we should do it or not. We do it. And that's tremendous success. So we say, this is a sign that it's the right thing. No. Person has to go after the seichel, not after what he sees. You can do something and it can have tremendous success, and it could be a sign that the Shotan has jumped in because he's very interested in the success. And it could be worse. See. Unfortunately, this is a great misgiving by many people and many of our own fellow Jews. The old days, when Jews went after their seichel, they relied on their minds and on the wisdom of Torah. So they judged the situation in accordance to its merits. If it was looked good, it was meritorious, then they went for it. If not, they wouldn't go for it, no matter what the circumstances were. Today, unfortunately, we have many, many Jews that they don't use their minds. They don't have that much of wisdom of Torah. So they rely on a lot on what could be superstitious belief. They'll tell you, look how successful it is. This is a sign from heaven that it's good. Who says? I can bring you two of the greatest proofs in the world against this. One is the golden calf. The golden calf was as successful as could be. Right away, they managed to collect money. You know how hard it is, you know how difficult to collect money. Right away, they raised gold like anything. Everybody gave. And they melted it down. And a golden calf came up. In the States, the Chazal say the golden calf, even was Yesh Beiruach Chaim, was alive. So who can doubt the success of that? It's a sign from heaven. They thought it was a sign from heaven. It was a sign from Gehenna. It was a sign from the Sotan. And it led to the greatest disaster. And we have another similar situation. Another similar situation. That of Yoshka. Christianity. If we're going to judge everything on its success, there has never been anything more successful than the world. How many followers in the world does Christianity have? I think we're talking, what, about 100 billion? No. Billions. How many? No. Not more, but there's billions throughout the world. See? Billions of followers in the world. Now, what did it start from? It started from one person. A handful. I saw a figure. I think I read there was a billion Catholic alone in the world. Now, if we're going to judge the truth of an undertaking on how successful it is, well then, heaven forbid, we all have to chas v'shalom become Christians. There couldn't be more of a successful movement. The answer is, we have to do what the Torah tells us and what our intelligence tells us to do. If it's successful, good. If it's not successful, so what? We're still doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Is commanding us. If it's wrong, then it's wrong, no matter how much success it might have. This is what we learn from here. So that was another element that came in. Now there's a third element. And that's the Erev Rav. Rashi brings in Pasuk Dalet. They said, he took from their hands and he formed a molten image and came out a golden calf. And they said, this is your God Israel, which has taken you up out of Egypt. What does it mean, this is your God? Who said? They said, this is your God. Who's talking to who? So from here, Rashi brings, Leinemar Eleheinu. They didn't say, this is our God. Mikan she'erev rav, she'olam mimitzrayim, heim shenikolo al haren. From here we see that the erev rav were the instigators. The erev rav were great multitudes of people that decided to join Israel when they went to Egypt. And they saw the great miracles that took place, and they saw how the Israel was so much on top of the situation. They wanted part of that also, so they went along. They were the ones that became panicked, and they panicked Klal Yisrael. And they said, see, this is your God. They're the ones who gathered up against Aaron and Hemsha Osua. And they are the ones who made the God. And they are the ones who influence Yisrael to follow them. We see this further also in Pasuk Zayin. In Pasuk Zayin, when Moshe is up on the mountain, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, Lech rei ki shicheis amcho Hashem eleisu me'eretz Mitzrayim, Hashem told Moshe, go down immediately, because your nation is becoming destroyed. Your nation that you have taken up out of Egypt. What does it mean, your nation? So what did Hashem tell him? He said, Shicheis amcho. Shicheis om leinemar. He didn't say the nation. El amcho, your nation. Erev rav shikibalte me'atzmecho. The great multitudes of people that you went and you accepted. Vigeratim v'leinim lachtabi. You accepted them as converts and you didn't come and discuss it with me. And you didn't ask me and I didn't tell you it's good. They are the ones, Sheikh, Heim shichasu v'hishchisu. They are the ones who are destroying themselves and destroying the others with them. We see further when it says Egel Masecha, Rashi says like this: Kivin shehishlichu l'or, once they threw it into the fire, Bo mikshefei erev rav she'ol imam mimitzrayim va'asu bitzofim. From the erev rav, from these people came, and they knew kshofim. They were Egyptians, so they were very well versed in sorcery, and with sorcery they helped to create this golden calf. So another element came in, and that's the Erev Rav. From here we can learn the danger of foreign ideologies. This is very important. Foreign ideologies has always been one of the greatest dangers to Klal Yisrael, and especially when they're in close proximity. Torah commanded us that when we come into Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua comes in, he must totally destroy all idolatry from the land and totally destroy the idolatrous nations. He's not allowed to leave them here unless they want to give up their idolatry. But if not, he has to drive them out of the land, because he says if you won't, they will be your downfall. They will influence you with their foreign influences, and this will be your downfall. And this is how it was, that through the whole Tanakh we see where this was not fulfilled, this became the downfall of Klal Yisrael. The fact is, the Torah writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes that he said that you must not come and eat together with the idolaters. Echal mizivcheihem. You should not come to eat together, because if you do, then your daughters will become married to their sons, and they will take the children and teach them how to serve idolatry. Foreign influences has always been a downfall to Klal Yisrael. And that's why it's very important for us that we must keep very strong in our ideologies, that they do not become influenced by the nations around us. Here we have this illustration of the Erev Rav. Now, so this already we see it wasn't so simple. We see that the groundwork was done by the fact that there was an error. Well, first of all, the whole idea that they're left in the desert, and all of a sudden their leader is not here, and he's disappeared. All right, they trusted that he would be back on that day, but through an error now, he seems to have not come back at all. And then the Sotan jumps in with his keches, with his powers. And then the Erev Rav jumps in with their influences and their kishuf and then their sorcery. So we have the background for this. Now we asked, well, what about Aaron? Seems like Aaron played a big hand in this. No, actually Aaron really didn't play a big hand in it. In Posuk Hey, where it says, Vayar Aaron, Vayivan Mizbeach Lefonav, Aaron saw what was happening and he built an altar. How could he do such a thing? So Rashi brings, he built an altar Litcheson. He built an altar in order to delay them. And he said, Chag Lashem Mochor, and he said, tomorrow we will have a great yontif for this calf. He was using a ploy, a strategy, because actually they wanted to serve it immediately. And he said, tomorrow. We'll all get up early tomorrow and we'll make a great celebration. This way he stole them for a day. And he said, Meisha will be, he said to himself, Meisha will be here tomorrow. And when he said Chag LaHashem, he had in mind the Chag to Hashem, not to the calf, because Meisha will be here. Le'hayim Shemiyove Meisha Kedem Shavdu. Now it states further, Vayar Aaron Rohar Beitvorim. He saw many things. First of all, he saw Chur Ben Achesi Shemichichem Varguhu. Varguhu. Chur was his nephew. Chur was the son of Kalev ben Yefune, who married Miriam. He was a great tzaddik. And Chur stood up to rebuke them and to resist them. And there became the mob mentality, and they killed him. And then Aaron saw something else. He said, let me make it. I'll be able to stand up against the anger of Hashem better than they will be. Then he said, so other things. He says, if they will build the altar, how long does it take tens of thousands of people to build an altar? In a matter of minutes, it'll be finished. I'll tell them, I'll build the altar. One person will take a long time. And I'll do it very slowly. And I'll stall for time. Hopefully, Meisha will come. And this is why he said, Chag LaHashem Mochor. He was hoping that tomorrow there would be a Chag LaHashem. Then also, when he told them to go and bring gold, he told them that they should take the gold from their wives and their children. And he felt that they'll have a difficult time getting the gold from their wives. I don't know what he thought. If he thought they would have a difficult time because the women would not want to part with their jewelry so quickly, or if he held that the women were tzidkonyes, they were very righteous and they would not give their jewelry for this. But at any rate, he held that they're going to have a difficult time, and that's why he said, go take gold from your wives. Meanwhile, the men went and brought their own gold. Incidentally, Shevet Levi was not involved in this chait, like we said, and the women were not. The women refused to participate in this. So we see that Aaron also, it was not that he was an instigator, heaven forbid, a leader to the contrary. He was trying to slow the whole process down. This is Derech HaPshat, in accordance to the actual text, some of the background, which softens the questions a great deal, that how was it possible that he should come to this sin. But actually we can go deeper. We have a Gemara in Masechta Sukkah. The Gemara tells us, and Daf Nun Beis Omer Aleph, it's a strange Gemara. Gemara says, it's a whole sugya where the Gemara is discussing the Keach HaYetzer, the power of the Yetzer Hora, of the evil inclination that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in man. The Gemara says, "Shemeniyahu Masa'ilam u'mizgare b'seinem shel Yisrael ki higdol lasos." The Yetzer Hora goes for the top. It leaves the nations of the world alone, and it goes after Yisrael. Omar Abaya u'betalmidei chachomim yesi mikulam. And the Abaya says, and when it goes after Yisrael, it goes after the Talmidei Chachomim even more so. And then the Gemara brings the story. Ki yod Abaya, shame lahu gavra de goma lahu itzeso, magdim nezel b'urcho. Abaya, one day he heard a man, which he knew, say to a woman. They both had to travel to another city, and each one was going to a different city, but there was a common way in which they could walk together for a long distance. In those days, the common mode of travel was by foot. So he heard the man talking to this woman, saying, "Nagdi menezel borcha, let's go together. Let's get up very early tomorrow. We'll meet and we'll walk along the journey together until we have to part our ways." When Abaye heard this, he became very concerned, because they were going to get up very early. It was hardly dawn. And he knew the way they were going. The way they were going was a very isolated way, which would go through woods and fields. So Abaye said, "Ezel afreshinu misur, I'll follow them. And in case they're tempted to do something wrong, I'll pitch up and I'll save them from doing something wrong." A great tzaddik. So Abaye got up early that day also. Ozul basrayu tlosa parshoi ba'agma. Abaye followed them for three parshois. A parsho is a long distance. A mil is 2,000 amas, and a parsho is 4 milin, so it's 8,000 amas. And what did we say? An amma is about half a meter. So it would be about 4,000 meters. And that's a parsha. And this was three parshas. And it was through country, isolated country, he followed them. He followed them all of this way, and he saw they were talking very nicely and conducting themselves very nicely, and they didn't do anything wrong. Ki avi parshi me'adodi, when it came time now where they reached, where the journey splits, and one would have to go one way and the other another way because they were going to different cities. Shamina de kamarin urche de chiko betzavosin besima. So you heard them say to each other, "We still have a long way to go, and it's a shame that we can no longer walk together because your company was so pleasant." Now, when Abaye heard this, he said, "Haiman de sanili havel mi nafshe." He said on himself, "If I was in this," and these were simple people, he said on him, he became very upset about it when he saw this, on himself. Why? He said, "If I was in their situation, I don't know if I would have been able to withstand the test." This is what he said on himself. So why is it that they had no problem whatsoever? Osa Hushaba. He mentioned what took place
to an old man, an old Talmud Chacham. He said, don't worry, don't feel badly. The greater one is, the greater the Yetzer Hara clings to him. So don't feel so badly. This is what the Gemara tells us. Now what does this mean? The Marami Prague explains. This is in the Sefer Netzach Yisrael Perek Beis, and I believe also in the Nesiv HaYetzer. He says two principles which are different, but basically if we go into them, if one will go into them in great depth, he will find that they are basically the same. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed certain axioms in this world. And the spiritual world is similar to the physical world. And just as we find in the physical world, we find that if something tries to rise too high, then there's a natural force against it. Physical world, we call that force gravity. And the higher it will rise, the greater the force against it will be. He says, so is it in the spiritual world. Spiritual world, just like in the physical world, if you don't try to lift yourself off the ground, then there's nothing that's going to come to knock you back into the ground. But when you try to lift yourself up a bit, you try to strive for greater heights, just like in the physical world, there will be a physical force against you, so will there be in the spiritual world a spiritual force against you. And the higher one strives, the greater the spiritual force to come and to force him down will be. This is what is meant. Kala godl mechavere, yetzre godl himenu. The greater a person is, the greater the force of the Yetzer Hara is against him. And that according to the Yetzer Hara's meniach umasa elam, doesn't bother him much with the nations of the world. He's got to be Israel, and he likes to go after Israel. Ubetamut chochem godel mikulan, yesem mikulan, and he likes especially to go after the Talmidei Chachomim. Now, we asked, how was it possible for a whole nation to commit a sin as this, and especially at this time, at a time when they were in the chuppah with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It states right before this, it says, "Vayitein el meishi kechalesa ledaber itay shnei luches eidus, luches evin ksuv metzav elokim." This was the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was just the exact time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving the tablets to Meisha. And a little further it states, Vayifan Vayerin Misha Menohar, Mesha turned and came down from the mountain. Shnei Luches Eidus Biyoda, he had the two tablets. Luches Ksuvim Mishnei Avrehem, these were tablets which were written through a miracle because the letters could be read from either side of the stone. Mizeo Mizehen Ksuvim. Ba'aluches Maisa Lekimhem. And this was the work of Hashem. Ba'amichtav Michtav Elekimhu. This was the writing of Hashem, Chorus Alaluchas, which were engraved on the tablets. This was the highest moment in the history of Israel and the history of the world. He and Hashem says, this is not a question, this is the answer. Because this was such a high moment, that's why there was such a great force against him. The Chazal say that there's a capital in Tilim. And we the Shir Shal Yom, and we say it on Yom Shlishi on Tuesday. And the Chazal say it goes on this case. אני אמרתי אלוקים אתם ובני אליין כולכם. When I gave you the Torah, the first Luchas, the first tablets, I said that you were Elohim. You stood at the level of angels. B'nei Elyon Kulchem. You were all like B'nei Elyon, like creations from a higher world. So at that time, they had reached the highest levels possible for any creation to reach. And therefore, the force, the opposite force, spiritual force, spiritual gravity against them to destroy this level was at its very greatest point. The Gemara says in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, "Le'nitin Torah ela liyais bnei chedin mimalachamoves shleyishtla aleim shum loshana umay." At that time, when Torah was given to them, they were becoming free from the mimalachamoves. They were becoming free from the powers of all of the physical powers in the world, all of the nations. In other words, there was the struggle, a life and death struggle, to free themselves totally from the Yitzhahor. So the Yitzhahor was coming with all of its enormous strength. This is the first principle, he says. Second principle, like we said though, that basically they have one root. This Sotam and the Yetzer Hara, what is it? The Manal says it doesn't thrive on creation. Rather, it thrives on the voidness of creation. For example, we have light and we have darkness. Light is a creation, darkness is the absence of creation. The Yetzer Hara and the Sotam thrive on the absence of creation, not on creation. And that's what Gehenna is. Chazal tell us, what is Gehenna? Gehenna is a gate salmovis, an abyss of nothingness, an abyss of darkness, of voidness, of endless nothingness. In other words, the absence of light in creation. And this is what the Yetzer Hara and the Sotam thrive on. What's the Malach HaMoves? Malach HaMoves is the power of death. What is the power of death? The power of death is the absence of life. This is what he thrives on. Now, this is why Rashi brings, right at the beginning of the Sefer Torah, that on every day it states Ki Tov. Hashem made a creation, Vayar Hashem Ki Tov, he saw it was good. On the second day, Yom Sheni, there was exception. There it does not say Ki Tov. Rashi asked the question, why not? What took place on the second day? Meleches HaMayim. Kodesh Baruch Hu started to create the waters. But it was not completed on the second day, and it continued into the third day. So Rashi says, "Mipnimale nemar kitei b'yem sheni lefi shelo hoyo nigmar meleches hamayim ad yem ashlishi v'harehis chalba b'sheni v'dover shelei nigmar eine b'milua v'tuvay." Because since it was started on the second day and it was not completed, something which is incomplete, you cannot say tova. In other words, it's lacking. On the third day, when it was completed, then Ki Tov was said twice. When something is lacking, it's the opposite of creation, it's the opposite of Tov, and that's where the power of the Sotam and the Yetzer Hara can grab onto. Now, says as follows: when it comes to the Madregas Hapchusim, when one strives for very elementary standards, those standards are easy to acquire in totality. So there the Yetzer Hara has very little to grab onto. But
when one strives for high levels, those levels are very difficult to attain in totality. Generally, we're just holding them by the tips of our fingers, and we're lacking a bit in it. Gives an example. For example, when you hear something or you see something, you make far less errors than in decisions. Because hearing and seeing is a much lesser level than the level of intelligence. So those levels you can achieve with a fullness. Well, a level of intelligent decisions, those are more difficult to achieve in a totality. This always can be error. Now, where there's incompleteness, there's lacking, there's chisoron, this is where the Yetzer Hara and the Malach HaMavis come in. Therefore, when an individual or Yisrael are striving for great heights, and these great heights do not come with totality, the power of the Yetzer Hara is very strong there, and they can become knocked down. To the contrary, by the nations of the world that do not strive for such great heights, their levels they can have in totality. Therefore, the Girui HaYetzer, the pursual, where the Yetzer pursues them and tries to influence them, that's at a minimum. Now, this does not mean to say then that the nations of the world are not going to do anything wrong. There's a difference between the level of Ra and the Yetzer Hara. Many of the nations of the world, they are at very low levels, and they're very close to the levels of evil. So they do evil not because of the Girui HaYetzer, that the Yetzer comes to pursue them and to influence them. They do evil because that could be their nature. But the Yetzer Hara does not pursue them that much, because they're not striving for great heights what they have is in totality. But by Klal Yisrael, or a Talmud Chochem that strives for such great heights, he's far away from evil. He's far away from evil. But at the same time, he has the Yetzer Hara to contend with, which is a very great force there. And this is why he can be, like we put it, he can be knocked off his horse. We have, and the rest of that posuk that I quoted, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ani amarti elokim atem uvenei elyon kulchem. I said that you were like angels, you were like those creations beyond this world when I gave you the first tablets. Achen ki odam tamusum. But the reality is you died like men. Ukechar asorim tipolu. And you fell just like a prince who was a human being. In other words, a prince is a human being. A king is a human being. To give you another example, it'll be a king. See? A king will have far more adversaries and far more political opponents and far more after his throne than the ordinary blacksmith. Blacksmith won't have to worry as much as the king. And the king's level that he wants to attain is far more difficult to attain it in totality than the blacksmith. And therefore, it's possible, it's far greater, the chance of him falling is far greater than the blacksmith. Although he'll be standing at a much higher level. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. This is what Shlema Melech said, meant when he said, Sheva yipol tzadik v'kom.
The tzadik, he said two things. Sheva yipol and kom. The tzadik, it's possible, might fall more than the other person. The other person might not fall so much. He could be never off the ground. He never got off the ground to begin with. But he won't fall so much. More kings get toppled than blacksmiths get toppled. That was one chidush, one thing that Shlomo HaMelech is teaching us. But he says, v'kom. But the tzaddik, not only he'll fall often, but he'll make sure to get back up. So, this is very deep. But, so now we understand, besides the entire background that is painted behind this whole episode, there was this fact that they were striving to rise to the highest point in human history. So the force of the Satan and the force of the Yetzer Hara and the Malach HaMavos was the greatest in history. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ani amati elokim atem, I thought that you would be able to hold that height. Bnei elyon atem, ochein, but I saw I was wrong. Ke odem temusum, you fell like human beings. Ukechar asorim tipolu, you were knocked over just like a king. Well, you were a king and you had a throne, you were a conqueror. And then the next day, there was a revolution, a coup, an ice king, finished. So this is not only is it not a question how it could happen at that time. To the contrary, Bedafka, it could only happen at that time. Now, in conclusion, we must from here learn what the Keach HaYetzer is. The force of the evil inclination, especially by Yisrael, that wants to topple him. His interest to topple blacksmiths doesn't excite him. He's more excited when he can topple a king. Now the Gemara says in this Gemara in Sukkah, Yitzru Omer Reb Shimon Lokish. First it says Omer Reb Yitzchok Yitzru Shel Adam is Gabo Alav Bechol Yom. Every day, the Yitzru comes with new ideas, new strength against the person. Every day, as it states, Rak Rak Ol Hayom. Reb Shimon Lokish said, Yitzchok Shalom is Gabalab the Cholyemu Mvakish Lamisoi. The Yetzer Hara comes against the person every day and wants to kill him. Now, this seems strange. What does it mean the Yetzer Hara comes every day and wants to kill him? What does that mean? Really, it's not so strange. First of all, we see it right here. We see it states that the next morning they got up and it says Vayeshev Om Lechol, they sat down to eat Vishosai and to drink Vayakum Letzachek, and they got up to sport. What did they start with? They started by eating. Very innocent. Then they drank. Alright, not so bad. Then they got up Letzachek. What was Letzachek? Rashi says Letzachek Gilarais and Shvichas Domin. Gilarais, acts of incest and adultery, and Shvichas Domin, and of murder. The Yetzer Hara starts out small, but his ultimate is to destroy the person. That's the ultimate. Again, we see they started with an innocent. Where's Moshe? Where is he? He said he'd be back by noon. He's not here. This is what it started. Innocent enough. Where did it end up? Ended up with a whole nation serving idolatry, which destroyed them. When Moshe came down, so he was met by Yeshua. Yeshua, his faithful disciple. Everybody went back to the camp. Yeshua stayed at the mountain, at the foot of the mountain, for 40 days and 40 nights, waiting for his master Moshe to come back. So when Moshe came down from the mountain, the first one he saw was Yeshua. So he asked him, what's going on? So Yeshua says, I hear shouts, I hear great noises coming from the camp, noises of war. So Moshe said, Ein kol anes gevura, vein kol anes chalusha. No, it's not the shouting of war. It's not the shouting of the victors, and it's not the shouting of those who are being defeated. Kol anes anech shamea. They are just shouts. What does it mean they are just shouts? Just shouts. He says they're not at war with each other. So Rashi brings kol harufin, begidufin, shouts of curses, shouts of vile language, ama'aninas nefesh shemun kishenemorin lei, that vex a person when he hears it. In other words, they've gone wild. Then it states they weren't fighting. Yeshua thought there was a war in the camp. So he says, no, I don't hear the shouts of the victors, and I don't hear the shouts of the losers. So what are they doing? They're shouting. So what? They've gone wild. Then it states a little further, Vayar Meshen, Chofe, Vayar Meshen Som Ki Faruahu, Ki Paro Adan Leshimtze Bekomeya. Meshen saw the nation that they were Farua, they were uncovered. What does it mean they were uncovered? They had totally uncovered themselves. The inner strength that a person has to control himself, to discipline himself, to direct himself, they had lost. That's what Moshe said. He says, I see what's happened to this nation. Kifaruah. They are no longer men. They have become wild. They have become like wild animals. Moshe saw what was happening. Now, what was this? This was the Yetzer. And then he says, they made themselves a golden calf on the mountain yet. He told HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, it's your fault. He told HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why is it your fault? This is in Posuk Lamed Aleph. He said, he says, Atohu shigaram to lehem. You caused it. Shishpat lehem zov. V'chol cheptzum. U'mayasa shalei yachtu. You let them play right into the hands of the Yetzer Hara. You gave them all the gold and everything they wanted when they came out of Egypt. Moshe lemelech sheyemayechul umashkez benoyu makashte v'teil lekis b'tzavore. A king gives his son gold and he gives him everything he wants and he gives him to eat and drinks and then he ornaments it, him. And then he puts gold around his neck, and he takes him and he leaves him right by a house of harlots. What should the son do that he doesn't sin? Now this was all here the work of the Yetzer. This is what the Gemara means, Bechol Yem Mizgaber Alav HaYetzer Umavakish Laham Yisoy. The Yetzer Hara has an ultimate objective, even though we refuse to believe it. He is out to kill and destroy the person. And if we do not resist him, then he will succeed. It states, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezra. Those who resist him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps, then he's no match. But if we do not, then he will succeed. This is what we learn from him. They started with an innocent problem. They went to eat, and then to drink. Then all of a sudden it came to murder, and it came to incest. And it came to what Amisha saw. There's nothing left of them. They become wild. Now, unfortunately, these things are happening right today. And when we talk that we have to guard ourselves from foreign influences and foreign ideologies, we have to be on our guard. Heaven forbid that this should not seep in, or does not seep into Klal Yisrael. And we have today, we start with alcohol. Now, alcohol can be very innocent, yet it kills. Destroys people. The road that destroys people. We have drugs. How many people do we know that their minds are blown with drugs? Where did it come from? Yetzer mevakish lahamisa. Yetzer wants to destroy them. Have AIDS. Today the statistics and the prognosis of AIDS, prognosis of the statistics of AIDS, the World Health Organizations have been for the last few years shouting. Governments are not listening. They've been shouting that we could see the end of it all coming. This is what the plague of AIDS looked like. They say it's going to, there was the great Black Death epidemic, Chas v'Shalom. There was the great flu epidemic. They say the Black Death epidemic devastated what percentage of the population? Does anybody remember?
A third of Europe.
A third of Europe. They write that it's kid stuff to what AIDS is going to do, heaven forbid, unless it's controlled. Kid stuff. Now, what is this? Where does it come from? This is the success of the Yetzer Hara, that's all. Only from there. Only from there. I was reading a story just last week. South Africa has another brocha imported from overseas. It's called ecstasy. Ecstasy, some of our good imports. Ecstasy is one of the most deadliest common drugs to hit the South African scene. What is it? You have today, this is what the story says, you have your discotheques, you have your dancing. This is the kol anos anechi shomea. The dancing, with the shouting, with enormous metallic music, with enormous amplifiers. The story is right in this. Enormous amplifiers and enormous beating, where it says, I forgot what it was, but how many beats per second or per minute. And these places get hundreds or thousands of people together, and they're marathons, where they'll dance for 6 hours, for 8 hours, for 10 hours, straight through the night. They call them, I believe, rage dancers. Heaven forbid our Jewish children should be involved there. Now, to do something like that, you need keches, you need strength. So the youth look for stimulants. No, there's a marketplace now. So you get all kind of people that are willing to sell stimulants and make a good profit on it. So this is where ecstasy comes in now. This is a drug which is comparatively easy to make and comparatively cheap, and it hypes a person up where in a matter of minutes, it'll give him enormous adrenaline and enormous strength where he can go on and dance for hours. It's one problem. The next morning you can find him dead. This is how deadly it is. And this is what the drug authorities say. This is the headache they have now to face. Now, what is this? Behold, Yael, Hayetzer, Mishadish, Umevakish, Lahamisa. He's doing a good job. And unfortunately, a lot of this seeps into our culture. Seeps into our culture. Unfortunately, tragically, you can go to a Jewish, so-called Jewish simcha, and you hear the same thing. You hear the metallic music, and the enormous beating, and the shouting, and the marathon dancing, where it's stimulating everyone. I was in New York last year. I was in Far Rockaway Shul, very fine rov, Shabbos Chanukah. This was a year ago, a year before the Shabbos Chanukah. And he gave a drosha, and he says, even though I'm about the only one, he said on himself, even though I'm about the only one in this whole neighborhood speaking against it, he says, I will not stop speaking against it. He says, our music we're taking from the goyim, and the worst of the goyim. And we're bringing it into our most sanctified places. And at that time was coming something which they called, I believe, Schlagrock, something like that. Which was this music, but they put it to, he says, we're putting it yet to words of Tehillim, to words of the Psukim. And we call it Yiddishkeit. He says, we call it Yiddishkeit. He says, our grandfathers would tear Kriya over what they see today. And I was very appreciative of what he said, because just the week before I was in one of the major bookshops, Sforim stores in New York, in Flatbush. And I see there they have a video machine. And they're playing videos. First of all, the tapes have become, the proprietor told me, he says, can't handle that anymore. It used to be Sforim. He says, now you need one shop for Sforim, another shop for English Sforim, another shop for gifts. He says, you need a shop for tapes. The tapes that are coming out, I'm not talking about the Shurim, the music tapes that are coming out. Jewish music tapes. But they have their now videos that are coming out. So there's a video playing. So you have the lights, it's in color, and the lights keep shining just like a discotheque. You have different greens and purples and blues and reds, keeps blending in just like a discotheque. And it's a stage show. The only difference, and the music is the same as a discotheque. The only difference is the directors have beards and they're dressed in black hats. And the ones that are dancing have big talis and tani, and they're dancing. And they put the words are going to the psukim of the nigunim. When I saw that, it turned my stomach. It's like sometimes, unfortunately, in New York, you'll see an advert in the papers, come for your holiday in such a holiday spot. We offer glatt kosher, and we offer Cholim Yisrael, and we have stage shows, and we have a casino. That's what it is. So after the drosh, I went up to him and I told him, one of the finest droshes I ever heard. More power to you. But this is where we're taking it from. And we support it. We take their music, and we take their dancing, and we put it into what we call Aravedu. This is what they did. This is the foreign ideology, the Erev Rav. And we should know what the Chazal tell us. The whole Yom, every day, the Yetzer gets up, and he has one agenda. And we see it happening all of the time. These are some of the principles that we can learn from this parsha. It's a very, very great principles in way of life in the Derech Hachim. It states, without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, we could not resist him. With HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, then we have nothing to worry about. It states, B'mokom habo letayer mesayinus, he who wants to go the right way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps him. He who doesn't, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows him. So this is, these are some very important principles for us in this parsha of the Egel Azor, the golden calf.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.